The bend in the lane was looming, and Josh was getting ready. He knew that once they turned it and were out of sight of the house, Dilys would hit him. She was a year younger than he was, only 8, and smaller, though chunkily built, but she moved like lightning. So, although Josh knew it was coming and was ready to dodge, he also knew that she'd still catch him a few painful kicks and punches before he got out of the way. He wasn't allowed to hit her back, because Auntie Nina said boys shouldn't hit girls. Well, perhaps so, but Josh knew they did, because the various boyfriends who passed through his mother's life frequently blacked his mother's eye, or worse. While they'd lived with their mother, Josh still thought of it as when they lived at home, the cops had been at the door every other day or night, or so it seemed. If it wasn't the fights that brought the uniforms, then it was tearing the place apart looking for drugs. Once they burst in looking for a shotgun belonging to the current boyfriend. It was discovered under Dilys's bed. And their mother had gone crazy when she realised that was where the boyfriend had stashed it. It took 3 of the uniforms to hold her back when she rushed at him brandishing a pair of scissors. After this episode, the social interfered, and they'd ended up living with Auntie Nina. Josh wasn't Dilys's only target. She'd attacked other children in the new school they attended. This caused a lot of trouble. Dilys now knew she mustn't do that, but she still had the anger in her, so she took it out on Josh. The child psychiatrist Dilys had been sent to see explained it as Dilys and Josh having grown up in a violent home. It was a form of self-defence, the doctor said. She, Dilys, was making it clear to anyone who might be inclined to hit her that it wouldn't pay. She'd hit back. So she hit out first. Again, Josh reasoned, that might be so, but it didn't explain why he was included every time they got the lecture about not attacking other kids, because he hadn't done anything. That was the bitter injustice of it all. Josh didn't want to hit anyone. He hated the violence. He loved his sister. He'd loved his mother. Still loved her, wherever she was, and not being able to protect her in the past had filled him with guilt. Living with Auntie Nina was all right, if you accepted Auntie Nina's rules, which were many. At least no one had fights, or got drunk and vomited all over the place, and the police didn't come. That, said Auntie Nina, meant he and Dilys were very fortunate. They had the chance of a normal life. He could have argued about that too, because he knew, from the parents who turned up at the school gates, that in a normal life children lived with their mothers, and not with the Auntie Ninas of this world. Most of the other children also had fathers. Josh didn't know who his father was. He had never asked, because he dreaded being told it was one of the tattooed boyfriends. Also, he suspected perhaps his mother didn't know. But he kept this and other opinions to himself, because if he'd learned anything, it was to keep quiet. But he did speak now.
Listen, Dilys, don't start punching me, right?
I want to, said Dilys simply, but I don't want you to.
It makes me feel better,
returned Dilys after a moment's consideration of his argument.
It doesn't make me feel better. I've got a big bruise on my arm from where you clouted me yesterday. Don't you like me?
At this question, Dilys began to cry quietly, tears rolling down her face. So he put his arm around her consolingly, because he understood. It had always been too much for Dilys, and she couldn't cope. She hadn't coped with the shouting of the terrifying men and the blood running down their mother's face. She hadn't coped with their mother slumped on the sofa in a drugged stupor, unable to respond to anything they said. She couldn't cope now, with Auntie Nina's rules, all the home-cooked meals Auntie Nina said were good for them. They had to eat everything, even though they'd never seen a Brussels sprout or a parsnip before. They had managed all their short lives until they came here on takeaways and microwaved pizza. Dilys snuffled into his T-shirt for a moment or two until the tears stopped. Then she kicked his shin.
Walk over there.
ordered Josh as he hobbled a few feet away to one side.
Where are we going?
Asked Dillis, quite calmly. It was like that. The anger had been released from where it had been bottled up inside her, and now she was fine. Until the next time.
Auntie Nina says we have to go for a walk, said Josh. But it's already nearly 5 o'clock, and we have to be back by 6, so we can't go far. Where would you like to go? To the spinney, said Dillis.
The spinney was a patch of woodland behind the row of council houses. Auntie Nina lived in the first house. But although she could see the spinney from her kitchen window, she couldn't see into it because it lay at the bottom of a downward slope. Thus, if they went there, they'd be out of range of her interference.
All right,
Josh agreed. Dillis smiled and began to sing a carol, Good King Wenceslas, which they'd learned at school months before at Christmas. She liked the story it told and didn't worry that it wasn't the right time of year for it. All the local children went to the spinney, not just Josh and Dillis. The kids clambered up into the low branches or made camps in the bushes and picked blackberries when they were in season. They seldom let Josh or Dillis into their camps, so Josh and his sister made their own camps in a different spot. But Josh was a first-rate climber, so if someone's hat was thrown up into the branches, or a ball, and lodged there, Josh would be called in to shin up and retrieve it. That would mean a temporary truce, during which they were let into the other camps. The moment was fragile and soon broken, because inevitably Dillis flew into one of her rages. Josh and Dillis clambered over the stone wall around a field, walked across it to the far side, then scrambled down into a ditch where Dillis got stung by nettles, resulting in a rash of white spots that burned like anything. That meant 10 minutes hunting for dock leaves to rub on the reddened flesh to soothe it. It put Dillis back into a bad temper. When they finally made it into the spinney, it was deserted. Josh was pleased they had it to themselves and didn't need to negotiate a play area with other kids. Dillis found a fallen branch and began to thrash the bushes with it and strike it against the trees. It was only a matter of time before she swung it at him, Josh reckoned. So he walked ahead of her and turned off the path into the tangle of undergrowth, because it would take all Dillis's attention to negotiate a route, and that would absorb her energies, with any luck. He could hear her behind him, slashing wildly with the branch to clear her way. He'd been wrong in thinking they were alone in the spinney, because they weren't. Ahead of him, through the vegetation, he could see a patch of white, and another of blue. He guessed someone had thrown rubbish away there. But when he got a little nearer, he could see there was someone lying on the ground, apparently sleeping. The person was half smothered with leaves and twigs, in some places more thickly than in others. It was as if someone had tried to cover up the sleeper, but hadn't finished the job.